Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Hello and welcome to the Philosopher's Zone. I'm Alan Saunders. This week we're looking at what it is to be considerate and how considerateness is one of the norms that underlie civilised society. And to discuss this, I'm joined in our Canberra studio by Professor Edna Ullmann-Margalit, who's just given a lecture on the subject at the Australian National University. Edna Ullmann-Margalit, welcome to the Philosopher's Zone.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, your lecture was the annual Passmore Lecture, named after the Australian philosopher and historian of philosophy, John Passmore. What's your view of him and of his legacy to the world of philosophy and indeed of rationality?
Well, he was indeed a great figure. I remember first year studying philosophy. We did study his 100 years of philosophy. He taught the world about the history of modern philosophy. But he was also very interested in a philosopher like David Hume. He was also interested in ethics, in applied ethics, in our indebtedness to or our responsibility to the environment. And he was one of the first to talk about these things. And I think we all owe him a great deal. And it's a very nice thing that they have an annual lecture in his memory.
Well, let's look at the subject of your lecture, considerateness. Let's approach it by looking at an instance or two of acting considerately. What would you suggest as a good example?
Well, let me give you a few very, very simple and simple-minded examples of what we take to be acts of considerateness. When you enter a gym, usually most gyms that I know have a little plaque on the wall saying, out of considerateness to others, please wipe the machines after you are done with them. Or suppose you are driving on a rainy day and the road has lots of puddles. Now, you are perfectly within your right just to drive along. But if you notice pedestrians walking on the sidewalk next to you, a considerate driver would, I think, slow down a bit so as to minimize the splash on these poor walkers. And it is these little things that I consider considerate behavior.
So what I'm doing in these cases is decreasing someone else's discomfort or seeing that they do not experience discomfort.
Exactly.
At a relatively low cost to myself.
That's a very good description of what it is. It doesn't cost us much to be considerate, and it does not quite help others, but as you say, decrease their discomfort. And the discomfort in these particular examples would be discomfort that are caused by me. So it, in a way, I see these things not just as being kind or generous or altruistic towards other people, but really as something that we owe other people, because the discomfort that would be caused is caused by us.
Now, in the cases that you've mentioned, the other people are likely to be strangers to me, aren't they? We're talking about something that's happening in public here.
Right. This is one of the interesting instances, one of the interesting characteristics about this duty or norm of considerateness, that it operates quite distinctly in relationship to people we don't know, people we know nothing about, people who just happen to be there, and there is nothing about them that merits this act of consideration on my part, except for the fact that they are people and they happen to be in my immediate environment.
So these are people to whom I have what you refer to as thin ties. What are thick ties?
Right. So the way I think of human relationship is a kind of as if they are lying on a very wide or long spectrum, at one end of which are people we know nothing about and they're anonymous to others. And with them, we have thin ties. And these were the ones our examples so far referred to. Whereas on the other end of the spectrum are the people to whom we are most intimately connected, namely our family members, usually, people about whom we know a lot. I wouldn't say everything, but we know very much, and we are in intimate, close ties with these. And these people I think of as people with whom we have thick ties. We have histories. We have connections that stretch back into the past and continue into the future. And a lot of knowledge and intimacy is involved.
Well, I want to come on to those thick ties a little later, but we've established now that in acting considerately, we're decreasing the discomfort of others at low cost to ourselves. We know now what it means to decrease the discomfort of others, and we know who the others are. But what do we mean by low cost? How low does the cost have to be before, well, how high can the cost be before we're talking about something other than merely being considerate?
Right. Of course, it's difficult to quantify what low means or how, you know, how little is little or how low is low. But the idea is roughly the following. Philosophers often speak about duties we have to others. They may be legal, they may be moral, they may be others. And then they speak about going beyond the call of duty, doing things which are acts of kindness, generosity, altruism. In fact, philosophers have spoken about saints and about heroes. We cannot expect anyone to be a saint or a hero, but these people are exemplary and they go beyond the call of duty. And I want to think of considerateness as not going beyond the call of duty, but as doing something that is still within the limits of our duties to each other, and yet they cost us very, very little, like slowing a little bit or holding a glass door upon entering, I don't know, a department store. You hold the door just momentarily to make sure it doesn't slam in the face of somebody behind you. Now, the slamming in his face would aggravate him much. The holding just momentarily so that it doesn't slam in his face costs me very little. So whichever way we count these things, they will remain at what we consider a low cost to ourselves.
It is actually possible, isn't it, to be over-considerate. I've done this, and I'm sure other people have had it done to them as well, which is where you hold the door open for somebody who is coming behind you, and they're just a little bit too far away. So as a consequence of holding the door open for them, you're actually making them rush. They have to hurry up in order to get through the door. So you're actually putting them to some discomfort, which they
Absolutely.
Might not have experienced if you hadn't held the door open.
Absolutely. This is a, you know, it's a terrific example. And of course, you can take things to extreme. You can be over-considerate, which I don't consider a good thing. I mean, it's one of those cases where to do more of a good thing is not necessarily good. You certainly either cause, you know, the person to rush or you cause the person to actually have to say thank you to you or something like that, which is not part of what the real notion of considerateness involved. So over-considerateness is not better, but actually less good than being considerate.
Now, you, I gather, think that when we're talking about this, when we're talking about considerateness, we're not talking about politeness. Why is that?
Thin line here. I think we often think of politeness in kind of structured ways. There are rules of politeness. There are rules of etiquette. There are right ways of doing things so that they will be considered polite. And insofar as this is the case, then politeness is not the same as considerateness. But I think that in those cases of when people just act out of natural politeness in unstructured ways or ways which are not governed by rules, then very often the notion of politeness and the notion of considerateness do overlap, and it's a little bit of a fine line to distinguish the two. I would still try to defend the notion that to the extent that to being polite is going beyond the call of duty, in that sense, considerateness is distinguished from politeness, because I want to say that considerateness is something we do owe to each other, and it is not something that goes beyond duty.
Of course, there are aspects of politeness which have to do with etiquette, and etiquette often has to do with social differentiation. But the great sociologist Norbert Elias argues in his book The Civilizing Process that the growth of table manners, was essential to the growth of self-restraint, which meant that it was essential to the growth of a civilized society. And the growth of table manners in the late Middle Ages, in his account, is, in a way, a growth of taking account of other people, taking account of not revolting other people, not disgusting other people by the way in which you're behaving at table.
Yeah, this is very, very true, and we can think of other examples where actual rules of politeness or of etiquette really started from just acts of considerateness. I think there is a norm, isn't there, at least in Anglo countries where the gentleman walks on the side of the street, when a couple walks on the pavement, and the gentleman walks on the side of the street and the woman on the other side, and when they cross the street, they have to change sides. And I'm told that this started in the time that carriages were splashing mud, and it was the gentleman's role to be between the mud-splashing carriage and the lady. So this starts probably out of the gentleman being considerate towards the lady, and thereafter it gels into a norm of etiquette or of politeness. So the history of politeness and rules of etiquette and their ties to civilized society, this is extremely interesting, and you are correct to point Elias as a central scholar to have investigated this and enlightened us all about that.
On ABC Radio National, you're with the Philosopher's Zone, and I'm talking to Professor Edna Ullmann-Margalit, Director of the Center for the Study of Rationality at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, about considerateness. Edna Ullmann-Margalit, we know now perhaps what it is to be considerate, but what is it not to be considerate? How am I failing if I fail to be considerate to you?
Well, if you are disrespectful to me, if you are insulting to me, if you are selfish in your behavior, not taking me or others into consideration when you act, you know, this kind of behavior, you will be acting non-considerately.
So what I am doing is I'm not taking into account our shared humanity, is that it?
To begin with, you're not taking account of the fact that I may be in your environment, I may be around, I may pay a price for your rude or inconsiderate behavior. If you don't wipe the machines, you know, then I have to wipe them or else to sort of put up with your traces, which is non-considerate behavior. I pay a price for something that you could have easily eliminated and alleviated from me. This is a very tiny example, and of course there can be more serious ones which amount to being disrespectful and being, in a way, ignoring my being a fellow human being in your environment. In that sense, being inconsiderate is something that, as you point out, detracts from some aspect of me as a human being in your environment.
Is there an element of reciprocity here? Is there an element of behaving towards other people as you would want them to behave towards you?
Yeah, this is really an interesting point. It's a good question. I think we would like it to be reciprocal. The whole point of acting considerately is in the hope that others will respond in kind. But I don't think that my considerate behavior is conditional upon your responding to me, and certainly not immediately and in the next instant in a similar act of considerateness. So the idea is that our world will be a much nicer and better and more civilized world if all of us acted considerately, if all of us were considerate people. But the actual considerate act that I now perform towards you as the person to whom I hold the door right now is not conditional upon you holding the door to me in the immediate or not immediate future.
So it's not a contractual obligation.
Right. And you don't necessarily even have to say thank you to me. You don't have to acknowledge it. But by doing it, I kind of set an example. I kind of spread out the hope that this act will be copied, will be imitated, will set an example for others. And the hope is that many more people will act in a considerate way. And in fact, also that people will sanction in an informal sort of way, people who act inconsiderately.
Well, let's turn to the thickest of all human relationships, family relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to ask here what a family is, because it can be a domestic unit, or it can be something larger, which it certainly is in some cultures, including some European cultures, where if I cross the globe and meet a cousin whom I have never met before, I nonetheless owe him special consideration, simply because, as it were, we share the same surname. I mean, that would be true if I were Italian or if I were Greek.
Oh, absolutely. It happened to me over this past weekend in Sydney, meeting relatives whom I hardly ever met before, some of them never met before. And of course, I feel that I owe them a lot and that we have special ties, absolutely. Now, the notion of the family has always been difficult to capture by definitions. And today, we all know that this notion even is less capturable by definitions, because there are so many more possibilities for a family. And even a nuclear family today is not what it used to be in terms of same-sex couples and kids who may come from different wives or different husbands and so on and so forth. But it's possible to kind of retain the basic idea of a family as people who share a household. And to me, it is important also to stress the idea that there is a parental link of some sort, a kind of intergenerational connection in the family of some sort.
So what form does considerateness take in the context of the family? How is it special and different?
Well, here we all feel that if we are considerate to our sibling or parent or child, you know, it takes on a very different kind of flavor from being considerate to strangers, because we know our family members. And yet my strong sense is that considerateness does lie, or should lie, at the foundation of the way a good and functioning family operates, that we don't just divide tasks and burdens kind of down the middle in a kind of blind and mathematical way. We are considerate toward each other in the sense that we know who minds doing the dishes more and who minds getting up early more and who wants something more and who fantasizes about something more and things like that. And we kind of divide chores, tasks, responsibilities in the family, not in a kind of blind mathematical way, but in a way that I would call generally in a considerate way.
Is it possible that we might, and in a way quite legitimately, be less considerate to the members of our family than we are to others, because a certain lack of consideration is a natural consequence of familiarity?
Yeah, like familiarity breeds contempt, so it might breed inconsiderateness.
Yes.
It might happen. I don't think it's good when it happens. I think it's, you know, it's something sometimes even to apologize for. I think that this is such a small thing that sort of flouting the duty of considerateness, even within the family, is not a good thing, is to be avoided. I don't believe in familiarity breeds contempt, so I also don't believe in familiarity breeds inconsiderateness.
You talked in your lecture about the family deal. What's that?
Oh, that is my notion, for lack of any better one, or for a kind of existing one, consensual one, about the kind of contract we all have about who does what in the family. And I believe that every family has this kind of implicit, sometimes in some aspects it is explicit, but usually it is a kind of implicit contract about the division of domestic labor. Family life involves a lot of tasks, a lot of chores, a lot of things to do. The shopping, the cleaning, the dishes, the meals, the cooking, the driving, etc., etc. And there must be some kind of division of labor. So the family deal is the broad term for the way we divide labor within the family.
And how do things go wrong in the family? Is it simply that the division of labor has gone wrong, or has in some way become inequitable?
Certainly, that's a possibility. Well, things in the family can go wrong in so many ways that we sometimes wonder how things actually ever go right. The main thing is when people are exploitative, when families allow for the exploitation of one member of the family at the expense of others. In traditional families, it has usually been the wife, the mother, the ever-sacrificing figure in the family who was expected to be sacrificing. I think that, you know, in families, very often we find ourselves doing little or large acts of sacrificing. But for one member of the family to be constantly expected to do the sacrificing, I think, you know, here we border on exploitation. So exploitation is certainly one way that things can go wrong. But another way is just very simply when you have what we referred to a moment ago as a family deal, as the kind of agreed upon way to divide labor, and, you know, certain members of the family just don't do their part, are negligent, do them wrongly, fall behind, all sorts of things like that. That's another very common way in which things can go wrong in the family.
On the other end of things, of course, you might do more than your part. This is what you refer to as a considerate gesture.
Right, and we have to make sure that this is not really, you know, going back to the notion of exploitation. When you do more, you can do more by way of being exploited, but you can do more out of your own choice. You know, even if the family deal, the way things are structured, mean that you don't do the driving of the kids on Monday, you may on one particular Monday take it upon yourself just because you realize that your spouse is feeling unwell or has had a particularly difficult day or something like this. So you kind of rely on the family deal in a way by going beyond it, by flouting it, but flouting it in the good rather than the bad and exploitative way. You do things you were not supposed to do by the kind of contractual agreement I call the family deal, but you do it because you want to. You do it out of considerateness. You want to alleviate pressure from the other. You want to increase their comfort or decrease their discomfort by doing this little or large gesture.
To close, can we just look at the status of what we've been talking about? Moral philosophy in the Anglo-Saxon tradition used often to be accused of being trivial, and its triviality perhaps reflected the lives of the men, and they nearly always were men, who practiced it. That, you know, they were concerned with why I should return a library book or whether I should take an extra slice of cake at dinner on high table. Against this, we have the rather more heroic view of things encouraged by Nietzsche and then by the existentialist. Now, your concern seems to be with matters that are not heroic, but not trivial. They occupy the space in which most of us live. Do you think this is an area that moral philosophers have tended to neglect?
Oh, this is a wonderful way of asking a question. It really is great. It's a long time since I heard, you know, the kind of triviality of Anglo-Saxon tradition in the middle of the 20th century referred to. You're certainly right. And to some extent, I suppose what I'm trying to do here would belong to the littler rather than the larger end of things. But I agree with you that it is not the little list. It is not trivial. I am interested in those duties which are still duties. They are not going beyond the call of duty, and yet they are doing something for the other in a way which is not going beyond the call of duty. I'm interested in trying to see where the foundation of the civilized society lies before we commit ourselves to any particular theory of morality.
Edna Ullmann-Margalit, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Professor Edna Ullmann-Margalit is director of the Center for the Study of Rationality at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, and she was in this country to deliver the Passmore Lecture at the Australian National University. The show is produced by Polly Rickard with technical production by Paul Goff. I'm Alan Saunders, and I'll be back next week with another Philosopher's Zone.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online. with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.